Volume.
Previously on Laduma High.
He had too many bullets. Cause they shot her, shot her, shot her, she fell down. They left. Came back and shot her and then left.
Well, we were losing at least one person every 2 weeks. 2015 was appalling. It was just a massacre. You know, people were dying and dying.
And like I said, I don't know how, but I'm gonna try my best to find out who killed me. I don't know how,
me too.
I'm always with that thing.
Yeah.
Because I wanna know what happened.
Welcome to the second series of Alibi. The story we are telling this time is called Laduma High. I'm Paul McNally. This is episode 2 of a 6-part podcast series. We are telling the story of the brutal assassination of the acting principal, Priscilla Mnunu, and why over a year later, the case is yet to be solved. The characters I've met so far are Sia and his father, Dumisani, Tandy with the large face from the school governing body, Vanessa, the blonde activist, who we are going to spend more time with in this episode, Richard Pittas, the editor of New Frame, who we'll chat with again in a future episode, Peter Masakane, the now principal of Laduma High, and of course, don't forget, the teacher who tracked me around the location in the last episode, the one Sia suspects of being involved in the killing, who we are calling Miss Cabela. In the last episode, we met the son of our father-son team. He's called Sia Bekwa. Now, I'm meeting Sia's father, Detective Warrant Officer Dumisani Bekwa, where he works at Prestbury Police Station. As far as the case goes, this much is known. On the 18th of March, 2017, a teacher called Priscilla was shot and killed in front of her class at Laduma High with 19 bullets. I first came to know about the murder when I met with Reverend Giddy of the KwaZulu-Natal Christian Council. I was looking at stories about assassinations in the province, and I knew what was happening was devastating, but I could never have imagined anything like this. It is Friday afternoon. Me and a young girl who has one of her arms in a sling are the only people in the police station's parking lot. We are in the suburbs, away from Laduma High, on the other side of Pietermaritzburg. Mpumuza, where Laduma High is and Sia lives, has goats and chickens walking the streets along with the people and the occasional car. By contrast, this is an affluent area with no pavements because the residents are exclusively driving from their homes instead of walking. I am looking into Priscilla's death in the hope of understanding the assassination crisis plaguing this part of South Africa. I'm digging into the woman she was, what she meant to the people she left behind, and how they are trying to make sense of their trauma.
Hey, no worries.
Waiting for me.
Sure, everyone wants to speak to you.
Yeah,
let's go. Dumisani is in a red and orange striped t-shirt. He is on standby. This means he has to make sure all the dockets that come in while he's on shift are processed. Prestbury isn't handling Priscilla's murder, but Dumisani has agreed to talk to me in the capacity of a concerned father.
Have a seat there. A lot of dockets, eh?
Yeah, get it as you can see. I haven't got time to sit on my table and do some work.
There are dockets piled up on every available surface.
In fact, my name is Bekwa, Dumisani Bekwa. So you're recording me?
Yes, is that okay?
Why?
I wanted to get your opinion on the story around what happened at Laduma.
Oh, okay. No problem.
Sia tells his father everything. They share the same cell phone. If you want to contact Sia, then you need to phone his father. I start by centering on the fulcrum of this case, by asking Dumisani about the day of the killing.
I was sitting here when I received a call from my son. He said, "Dad, come quickly." And they shot the teacher at school.
He stopped everything and immediately drove to the school.
So when we got there, everyone came in, everyone was mourning and complaining. And most of the people, they knew that there was a problem there. Already know the people are starting pointing fingers.
Really?
Yes. So-and-so is behind this, so-and-so is behind this. It was speculation.
Mm.
But the school children, they seen these people.
He means they saw the assassins.
It's just, even my son see these people. It's just that they don't want to get involved. They're scared.
The school children?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dumisani says that people began to speculate after the killing. However, there were also signs leading up to the murder that something was going to happen.
But before that, some school children, they said they saw that someone came and asked them if the teachers are coming today. Then they said yes. Then they left.
If you couldn't hear that, he said that the same car that carried the hitmen was spotted earlier at the school by students. Men got out and asked if the teachers were going to be present later. Students told them, yes. Then we come to a plot twist that Dumisani tells me, and Tandy from the school governing body and sources within the police have both confirmed. There was a significant phone call made directly to Priscilla on her private cell phone minutes before the assassins arrived. The man on the end of the phone asked if Priscilla was at the school, if she was available to accept a delivery of sand. Priscilla said yes. Remember that phone call. It is going to be important in a later episode. The sand never arrived, but the assassins did, and Dumisani wants to show me exactly how they got into the school. He takes out a pen and paper and starts drawing.
Yeah, maybe just draw it too.
This is the gate.
Yeah.
It's a main road here. Right, it's a gate. So you go in, you go like this. There's a first block. School is like this.
Mm-hmm.
School is like this.
Can you describe the drawing?
And then there's another building here. And there's another building here. Right, the principal office is here.
There would usually be a security guard here on site. Now, despite Priscilla staying to teach her matric class about the Cold War, he was told allegedly to go home. Several sources have said the guard claimed that it was Priscilla who ordered him to go, which seems unlikely. And unfortunately, Priscilla isn't around to confirm it. Dumisani keeps drawing his diagram of the shooting.
And these are the classrooms.
Yeah.
These are the classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So she was shot there in this classroom. There's a main road running behind.
Okay.
From this road, right. This is a place. So these people got out from their vehicle, they walked this way. Came from behind like this.
Mm.
Into the door here. They saw these two people coming, they enter here. They went straight, see what's, there's a board here. This is what these two people are sitting here, facing this way. So they walk into the door and instead and shot it.
Then all of a sudden, Dumisani looks like he wants to jump from his chair. He's agitated and upset.
This is very frustrating.
Which, what do you mean?
I mean, this thing, this case is emotional.
It's very emotional.
Very emotional.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. I must remember that was my teacher.
I know.
She teach me 2 years. So at 9, ages grade 11 and grade 12.
And she taught you history?
Yes.
Here is a father and son. Both grew up in the same house, and both were taught history by the same woman.
Maybe she was still going to teach my grandson.
Yeah.
My grandchild, I should say. If they didn't teach, they actually
took something away from our community, Pumuza community. They took something away from our Pumuza community. Because I think if she could even become a principal of the school was going to be perfect. No fraud, nothing. You know what I mean? You name it. I know there's people, they say there's nobody's perfect, but that auntie, she's, I would say she was perfect. Right. She was a good auntie.
Yeah. And did she leave behind children of her own and her husband? And
she didn't have a husband. She had children. She didn't have a husband. She was never married.
She was never married.
And you know what? And I'm living there. And the people, they keep on asking me, do they really can't solve this case? They think I'm involved. But isn't that is beyond my control? People always come, you really can't solve this. The police can't solve this. Like you also involved. But
yeah, so they see you as a police officer and they think that
you should
be
able, know everything.
Yeah.
This is the question Dumisani is often asked. Why can't the police solve this case? It's something that I have asked myself dozens of times. It frustrates me. So I imagine it must be unbearable for Dumisani to feel like he is being blamed for the stagnation. But then he adds something else, perhaps suggesting why it hasn't been solved.
In fact, there's a power hungry day. People, they wanted to power.
They want power.
They want to be in power. They wanted post. They want to be higher post. Everyone did so.
The talk of the post, as Dumisani calls it, at the school, crops up again and again. The fact that Priscilla was killed so that someone else could take her job as acting principal. They were after the post. That was the prize.
And there's people they want to be in charge.
Yeah.
Power hungry.
Yeah.
Those power hungry people, move them.
We should move them.
Yes.
Sia's father brings home packs of photos, mugshots, to check if Sia can identify the shooter, as he calls it. Sia was a prime witness, after all, and says that he'd be able to spot the killers with no problem. When he says this, I'm reminded that this story is a community of rumors, hearsay, and people that are hard to trust. Here's me talking to Sia.
What was on those pictures?
It was the pictures of the shooters, the main people. Like the men,
really?
People, really.
Okay, so then he brought them home.
He brought here the docket. We're sitting here, sat here, and then opened the docket, took out the pictures, and put them here. The table, saying, I must check if I can see the people who killed them. So I checked, I didn't see them. I saw them now. They are not chasing. I must call another person who was there to come and see.
How many pictures did he put out?
Maybe it was 8 different people.
On this table?
On this table.
And, okay, so then you looked at each one.
Yeah.
And then how well did you get a look at the killers when it happened?
I can even identify them if I pass by them like this. I know them. Like I said, I can't get them out of my mind. When I told him minutes, I won't rest until I know who killed my father, who killed my teacher. If he doesn't help me, I'll do it myself. If they kill me, they kill me.
What does he say to that?
That's where he started to get involved. He said, okay, fine, let's see who killed me. I said, let's see who killed me. Started working on the case that day. Like I said, I've been playing a detective role to find out who killed my teacher, because I find it strange. I tell my father everything was about, father, I know this and this and this and this and this. Some things I can't tell you because I can get into trouble. I'm scared. I tell him everything, my father.
Of course, witness accounts can be notoriously unreliable. But the key fact to remember here is that the teacher who followed me around in her Avanza in the last episode, Miss Gabella, remember that? Demanded to always be present when the kids were talking to the police.
You see, the only problem that I told the police, we were in the office. I stood up and said, okay, I'm done. I'm leaving now. When the police was there, the police said I was rude. I said, I'm not being rude. Because the only thing that's bothering me here, why is she here? Every time we were caught, she was there. We said, as children, we don't need any teacher here.
I reached out for confirmation of this from Mr. Makhaba, who was in charge of Laduma at this time. He said that he wasn't aware of Miss Gabella forcing herself to be present while the kids spoke to the cops. But he said if it was true, it was, in his words, too much.
You know, you never gave the police accurate evidence of the assassin.
We did.
You did?
We did. We went to the police station without her.
Oh, without her?
Yeah, after we saw the police dead, they said, okay. They came with a car, they took us from school, and then we went straight to the police station to do the investigation with. And we made a schedule of the suspect, what he looked like.
Like a sketch?
Yeah, like a sketch. We did that everything with them.
And how did it feel when you actually went to the police station like that and like made, you know, and kind of gave that evidence to them? How did that feel?
It was a relief at first because we were like, okay, fine, they're going to catch them. We're happy that they're going to catch them. And then as the time went by, nothing happened. No feedback, nothing happened.
It's this inertia in the case that means Dumasani keeps getting questioned about why he isn't doing anything. People don't realize that Sia's dad is working of his own accord, on the sly. And unfortunately, he hasn't brought a photo home yet for Sia that matches the identity of the shooter.
So it sounds like your dad is still working on the case. He said he's brought this month. He brought
this
these
month.
Photos.
He brought these photos this month. The people who will kill her are people who are still here, who want position. There's a lot of things, my teacher was about to expose.
Really?
What was happening in the school.
Okay.
There are a lot of things they were about to expose.
You'll remember activist and writer Vanessa Berger from the last episode. She's the expert on hitmen. I ask her, how can I better understand the economy of violence and particularly hitmen in KwaZulu-Natal? And she says to come with her on a visit to Gleeblands. This is the hostel known as Where the Hitmen Live that we talked about in the last episode. I tell her, sure, but I'm actually terrified to do this. I sit in my rental car and try to psych myself up, talking sheepishly into my recorder.
The truth of the matter is that when I said I was going to do the story, my girlfriend made one criteria, and she was like, don't go to Gleeblands. And I shrugged it off and laughed it off. And now I'm in the car about to go there. And it's scary. The guy who I'm meant to meet was so afraid to be meeting me, not knowing who I am, that he needed to do all these checks with who had introduced me, given me his details. He's so paranoid. He lives there. The key is not to crash the car when you're nervous.
Vanessa doesn't have a car. It was stolen. So I'm heading to pick her up.
You know, my car was very well known.
Mm.
It was also very old. It was an old Isuzu 4x4. And then it was stolen. And it had about a litre of fuel in it when it was stolen. So it wouldn't even have got around the block. And it was very obviously towed. Say on the right-hand side. So I was told that it was sort of like an inside job done with the police. And as I say, it had gear locks and immobilizers and alarm systems and everything.
You think people had just seen your car?
Homemade ones, which people weren't aware of.
Mm.
So it was obviously it was towed, and say the timing was terrible, and it wasn't insured. So, yeah, it was a disaster. And they said, they knew your car.
Mm.
And they'd followed. I was told out that I had been followed. So, because I only just left Cleveland and then gone to the friend's place.
The conversation starts jovially and then gets sterner and sterner as we move closer to Cleveland's. I'm beginning to get tense.
2015, it was terrible. We were literally losing 2 or 3 people every month being killed. It was so dangerous to go in and out. Some of the reports is the bosses stopped them from using company cars to go in and out. They weren't allowed to go in. Some of the guys were staying with me because they couldn't get in and out safely enough to carry on working.
So some of the reporters?
No, the guys from the hostel.
Wow.
So they were living at my place for a while. So I was helping them get in and out of Cleveland's. So I used to go in there sometimes midnight and stuff, and it was hair-raising.
Jeez. So have you had points where like that, where you're like, I'm not going to do this anymore, I'm not going back to this place?
No, never.
Okay. Why?
Oh, I enjoy the work.
I understand, but I'm just trying to. I mean, I struggle to articulate that kind of thing, and I just wondered if you had an answer. It's almost like it's more of an emotion.
Look, some days I feel I can't take the killing anymore, especially when you lose. Just stay straight again. Especially when you lose people that you've known very well and you've come to respect and like very much, and even consider as a friend.
Yeah.
I've never been so angry in my life as when Sipho Ndebele was killed, and I got there and he was on the floor and.
Your article about it was very emotional.
Oh, it was awful. That was bad. Pina's murder was terrible. Frank's murder was awful. You can't just leave it. You've got to do... If there's something you can do, then I think you should do it. Whatever you can do. It's not something I set out to get involved in at all. Mm. It just sort of happened by default.
Cleveland's is elevated, so you can see it from the highway. The hostel isn't one skyscraper, as I imagined, but rather separated into several dozen blocks. Each block is assigned a letter, and each letter signifies a particular faction. We snake towards it, and the blocks get bigger, until we are at the foot of the hill, staring up at Cleveland's and facing a security roadblock.
Oh, we've got a roadblock. What they want to do is to bring in a disc system where people have to stop and then...
Which way is it?
You go right. And then produce a disc. Now, can you imagine that working here?
Mm.
And for starters, it will be incredibly dangerous for people to stop. There's been a lot of people shot, at least stainless side. At least 6 people that I know of have been shot or... killed at that entrance alone. The other entrance also is the same. Very, very dangerous.
Going into Cleveland's is like entering a small village. Skinny roads, people walking and hanging out washing, and on our left and right, block after block, where people live.
And this is where the hitmen live?
A lot of the hitmen live this side, yeah.
I mean, it's incredible how... obviously it's a huge place, but I also didn't quite realise how close... the blocks were in terms of, this is the hitman block, this is where we just were.
And that's community hall on the left and the councillor's office that was burnt down in 2013 during protests. And that's what led to the ward council being awarded the most expensive private security detail in South Africa for someone of his status. And then you turn right here.
Right at the goat.
Yeah, right at the goat. Please don't go too slowly through here because they'll have been drinking now and it's not going to be very safe.
Okay.
This is block 57, also with its own private security detail. Block 52 on the right. Now you can see these are the very, very old blocks. It's a crime that the municipality and the government haven't
upgraded museum.
I mean, this is like, they look condemned, basically.
It's worse. It's really horrific. I mean, you can see there's no windows in half of these places. And also, I mean, it's not surprising that it's easy to recruit people to kill other people when they're living in such degraded conditions.
Jeez. It looks like a fire has been burnt out there. And it's
that's actually mold. It's from where there's leaks. The water runs, pours down through these blocks when it rains. It's unbelievably unhygienic for kids living here. People should not be made to live in these conditions. The blocks on the left-hand side, you can see very much older, very dilapidated, lots of broken windows, no maintenance. These date back to pre-apartheid times.
I mean, there's no...
And you can see, look, block 57. Look at the roof with block 57. It's still not been fixed from the storm.
This one in the distance here?
Yeah, from the storm in October last year. And for God's sake, don't run over the goat. Or else you get shot. No funny here. I'll leave you. I'll just abandon you.
We turn another left and then go down a steep incline towards one of the blocks. I park right in front on a patch of grass. A group of men are sitting in a circle under a carport waiting for us.
Nice to meet you.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Paul.
I agree to protect the identities of everyone I meet at Gleeblands, so I'm not going to use names. They still fear exposure and being shot, but they are eager to talk and want to make it clear that this isn't a war.
There is the one question that I want to ask from you. Is it dark here? As it's in the daylight today. Is it dark?
No.
It's not dark.
Yeah. No, it's not dark. No, we're in the daylight today.
Yeah, it's not dark.
It's not dark, no.
Unfortunately, you will never pass through this area when it's night. You see, take the statement of the one who was speaking on behalf of the SAPS on the Morane Commission.
The Morane Commission was an official inquiry into the excessive number of assassinations in KZN, which focused quite heavily on Gleeblands.
He says, the problem at Gleeblands is dark even in the daylight, but it's not dark. It's not dark. You say it's dark. It's not dark now, huh?
How can you?
And he say the people are dying there because they are fighting for the bottle of the beer, a minor conflict that caused them to be killed each other.
Vanessa believes these men have been targeted and systematically killed because they signed a petition against the local ward councillor, Robert Umzombi.
So people are it's just chaos and people are killing each other over a beer.
Yes, which means people are abnormal, which means they are not the people who have their stable mind, you see. Are the people who can fight with just a bottle of beer. So all these people who are get killed is because they were just minor conflict. You see,
the residents here are upset about this stereotype of Gleeblands being violent chaos when they believe they are being systematically targeted by assassins. Those in danger never know who will be next, and their methods of protecting themselves are a little DIY. They don't walk past certain blocks during the day or night, and only approach the complex from certain sides. It doesn't really work. They can't escape the fact that they are in more danger where they live than outside of Gleeblands altogether. When an acting principal like Priscilla is assassinated, then the public sympathy feels easy to come by. But when a man out here in Gleeblands gets taken out, there is an assumption that he provoked his death with violence of his own somehow. I get showed the bullet holes that are still in the side of the carport from where people have been gunned down, exactly where we are sitting. And then I get asked if I want to go into one of the blocks to see the living conditions.
Look, look.
We're in like a kitchen area, but then how many people okay. stay here?
Four people here.
Four people in that room?
Yeah, supposed to be four people, two.
Wow, and how big?
Four. Hello? How full am I?
There are reports of residents needing to mop the blood out of these tiny rooms after an assassination. They are claustrophobic, especially those with four to a room. There is minimal light, but also people have imbued them with small comforts. They have put up posters on the wall and rugs on the floor.
Is this all these people are here is the area of cooking. That's why they were to squeeze themselves.
Hello.
This is the bathroom.
Okay. Hello. How are you? Good to see you. My name's Paul. So he's just showing me around.
Okay.
How long have you stayed here for?
Yes, I'm staying here.
For how long?
2 years.
You see, it's the same.
Over 100 people have been assassinated at Gleeblands, and the people here must live with this accumulated distress. Just like in Mpumuzi, Sia and the community must live with the trauma of Priscilla's death. I'm starting to feel ashamed of being so scared about coming here, terrified to visit for just a couple of hours a place that people have to call their home. The shame keeps growing and growing until we get in the car and Vanessa says...
Just a word of advice, keep your eye on the rear view mirror.
Okay. What am I looking for?
Anybody following you?
Okay.
My shame has burst. It is okay, I tell myself, to be scared. And if anything, I need to guard against this whole situation being considered normal. I drop Vanessa off at her home and drive back to Pietermaritzburg. At the time of me visiting Gleeblands, 8 people had been arrested in connection with the assassinations, including a former police officer, Durban Central SAPS Detective Ndueshu. All 8 were awaiting trial. In November 2018, the band of 8 were facing 22 counts of murder, attempted murder, racketeering, extortion, and possession of a prohibited firearm and ammunition. By the time the case went to trial on August the 25th, 2019, they were known as the Gleeblands 8 and were accused of killing 9 residents at Gleeblands and conspiring to form an association that controlled money that had been collected at the hostel. On the first day of the trial, the court heard that the police officer who was on trial was allegedly assigned to organize automatic weapons that were used to assassinate rival residents. The case has been postponed, unfortunately, until March 2020. It is good that there have been arrests, but having a police officer at the center of so much violence doesn't encourage me to seeing Priscilla's case move forward, especially within the police. Here is me talking to Domasani, Sia's father, again.
So say one of the teachers or someone who ordered the hit.
You cannot say it's only one person.
Oh, okay.
It's not one person. They all people. There's 3-4 people. They knew what was going to happen.
4 people.
A mechanism.
Okay. Why do you say that?
So out of 20 teachers.
But why can't it be one teacher?
Because he can't make alone. He has to get information.
Mm.
And if you remember, everyone, they are friends. They were divided. They were divided like this. There's A group and B group.
Okay.
So the vice principal, the Kuno, was in the B group. So the A group people, they knew that she was going to kill. Definitely.
He's saying that the staff was split into 2 groups. One for Priscilla and one against. The one against knew as a collective that she was going to be killed.
Get information if there was no link between them, one Amanda, even on the day, after the killing, before the killing.
Do you think if you'd been involved in this, then you would have solved it?
you think the person would have gone to jail?
I don't know, I did it to myself.
But I mean, it sounds like you would have.
No, I've got the information, I've got the ideas what I would have done. But I can't go tell the people from others, they interfere.
You said you tried to offer help though.
Yes, I did.
How does that, when you try and offer help to an
officer? I phoned the investigating officer, I told you I got the information. Come tell you, speak to me, he didn't come.
So Dumasani had information about the case, and he told the investigating officer at the time, but they never bothered to come and take a statement from him. That was the first guy working on the case. We are now on the third investigating officer. I have been trying to contact all three of them. I want to know why they didn't use Dumasani's help. I want to know why the case has been moved from one person to the next. And I want to know why the case seems to be dormant. I get nothing. And then when I call Colonel Satorli, the second investigating officer, on one Tuesday morning, randomly, he answers.
Hello, Yebo.
Hello, sir. This is Paul McNally. How are you?
Right, and you?
Good, thanks.
More from Colonel Satorli and how the cops are dealing with this case in the next episode. You've been listening to episode 2 of Alibi's second series, Laduma High. This is the second of 6 episodes looking into the brutal assassination of a high school teacher. This podcast has been written, edited, and produced by me, Paul McNally. Thanks to Gavin Haynes, Kyla Hermanson, Jeff Kelly Lowenstein, Tom McNally, and Stels Desoy for their editorial oversight. This episode was mixed by Gwinch Sarameh. Music for the series was composed by John Bartman. The episode was produced by Volume and is available wherever you get your podcasts, particularly at www.volume.africa/alibi. Here you will also find our first series that tracked a possible wrongful conviction. Finally, we want to thank our publishing partner, Arena Holdings, publishers of the Sunday Times, timeslive.co.za, Business Day, Financial Mail, and the Sowetan, and their head of multimedia, Scott Peter Smith, for supporting the project and pulling all the pieces together on their platforms. On the next episode of Laduma High.
I think that maybe one of the teachers who works at the school had ordered the killing in order to get her job.
And to be honest with you, bro, I won't tell you lies. That case is a straightforward case. I believe that 90% of the school teachers are aware of this killing. They know exactly what was going to happen. They know everything. It's just that now it's a pity we do not have an evidence. Volume.